at your service. It's the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts. To ask a question, call 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Now, the host of the Home Improvement Show, Rich Orris, on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
All right. Good morning, St. Louis, and welcome to the Home Improvement Show right here, like he said, on KMOX. I'm your man. I'm your host, Rich Orris, here, and I am here for the next 2 hours. We're going to dive into all things home maintenance, remodeling, and everything and anything you may need to keep your house in tip-top shape. I cannot wait to get through this with everybody there. We're having a great time, and whether we're planning a big renovation, maybe tackling some DIY projects, or just trying to get your home ready for the winter months, for the holidays, this is the place to be right here, right now. And the best part for everybody is I'm here to answer your questions, your topics, or my topics. And I love getting through that with you. So give me a call. 314-436-7900, and let's talk about whatever's on your mind, from fixing a leak to designing the kitchen of your dreams. I'm here for you today, so get ready, settle in, give me a call. Let's make your house the home you've always wanted it to be. Again, the number where you find me, 314-436-7900. Don't be shy. Now let's get this thing started here. And I have a lot of different stuff I can kind of go over, topics I can talk about. I love getting into it with the questions, the comments, with other listeners calling in to help out and give their home remedy tips. And we have a good time. We have some great topics, and we enjoy doing it. So I'm here for you. And last week we did have some really great questions and conversations that we went over. Linda, she called in and was kind of asking my opinion about the resale value of a home if you remodel your master bathroom and you don't replace the bathtub, or you take out the tub shower combo and make it just one bigger shower. And of course, during that, we always have that conversation about the real estate people. The real estate agents are going to definitely say you need a tub in the home for children, if there's one in a different bath, in a hall bath, in a Jack and Jill bath between other bedrooms, then maybe you're okay doing that. From my personal opinion, what we kind of went over and talked about, and I can kind of tell you a story about a client of mine that we remodeled a bunch of bathrooms for years ago. It was a home, big two-story home in Webster Groves, and we remodeled every bathroom in the house, including the master bathroom. And some years later, got recontacted again, wanted to look at a different project, some windows in their new home that they had downsized into. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that home was so beautiful. You downsized, you sold your home. And she said to me something I'll probably never forget. She said, yeah, she said, but I can tell you that we got a gargantuan amount of money for our home because of that master bathroom that you guys remodeled for us. Everyone loved it. And it was the piece of the home that really sold the home. And I can tell you here right now, that master bathroom did not have a tub in it. And they got a gargantuan amount of money for their home. And this was a while back. This was pre-COVID. This was prior to just things growing and blowing up in the real estate area and the dollars of what homes cost and everything. So it is possible to not have that tub in your master bathroom and do just fine. And if you're not a tub person, I say go at it, have a good time while you're there, get the shower everyone's going to love, and I don't think many people are going to be too worried about that later on. But we also had Eddie had a question about how often should you power wash your home, and that's kind of like getting into, you know, I always get the question, how often should you change your furnace filter? And if you look it up, a lot of them are like, oh, every 3 months, this, all these different opinions on when you should change your furnace filter. Well, power washing your house is kind of the same. Really, if you can find out when it's dirty, change it when it's dirty. Power wash the house when it's dirty. So where you live, what's around you, less trees, less just environment going on. Maybe you only need to do it every couple, 2 or 3 or 4 years. Maybe you're in a very high wooded area with a wet facing north side that every single year, it depends on how close your neighbors are and how the air moves and which way certain areas face. So yeah, it's, you could need it every year. You could only need it every 5 years. It's kind of work it out, check it out, and look around and see what's going on. So we had, we also had Tom was looking for some advice on getting rid of fleas. And that was kind of nice because Ruth had called in with her home remedy on removing fleas and kind of taking a shallow pan with some soapy water in it, putting a table lamp, a light bulb attracted to the light right next to the pan, right over the pan, and they jump in the pan, they get trapped, and you're kind of getting rid of them that way. I appreciated all that information. And then Paul had called in, and he was kind of asking about advice on washing his roof. And if it's professionally washed, will it really extend the life expectancy of that roof system? And it's kind of a hit or miss thing in my opinion, what we went over. If you do the research, there will be a lot of information out there saying that it will extend the life. I question a little bit how long that truly is. And it, again, it's like, how often should you power wash, or how often should you change that furnace filter? Well, maybe if you're in a wooded area like we were talking about, you've got a lot of tall trees, you get a lot of that algae on one side of your roof, and it's really present and there's a lot of it and it's constant, then yeah, that cleaning that and keeping that clean may extend the life expectancy of your roof a lot longer than it may someone else that just has some of it and some streaks here and there and just not a whole lot of it. So it's kind of hard to say. And of course, the people that do this type of work are going to say, yes, absolutely, it can do that for several years. Well, several years can be 3 years out of 30. And so that's really a 10% thing on the high side. But in cleaning your roof, it does get that algae off, and algae kind of holds moisture, keeps things wet. It's not great to have it wet the whole time, especially in St. Louis with freeze-thaw cycles. And if it's wet and you're getting the freeze and the thaw and it's expanding, it's kind of just like the driveway. So it can damage the granules, and the granules help with the UV rays and all that also. So if it's there, it can kind of have a little bit of damage there, make the roof maybe not function as great or be as protective as it should. But it really, again, I think it would extend to how much, how bad, how often does it really matter. And then they also talk with that roof cleaning about energy efficiency, that if it darkens your roof, it's going to absorb more heat in the summer. Well, but in our area, that's kind of a hard conversation, too, on energy-efficient roofs, because we get pretty cold in the winter, too, and a darker roof's going to hold some of that heat in. It's going to put some of that heat from the sun in, so it's going to help you in the winter. So energy-efficient color shingles isn't a big deal in our area. It doesn't help you with a lot of, your energy bills per se and all that. So having some dark algae in areas on your roof really, I don't think is going to affect your energy as much as you might hear about it also. But there's plenty of ways to clean that roof off, and there's professionals that do that, and it's not a bad thing to do. Just don't power wash it. You want a very low pressure when you're rinsing everything off, because that can damage the granules even more so than probably having some of that algae on there if you use too much pressure and you wash more of those granules off than you should. So addressing this really can be helpful. It can help maintain your roof, and it'll help it look better. If it's on a side where you see it all the time, it's going to just improve the aesthetics of the home and the value of the home and people liking the home. So we had a lot of great conversations, a lot of great questions last week. I like to go over some of these and put some more of that out there too, because if you do hear of something that kind of sparks something for you, you can call in, you can ask about it. You can also go back to the past week on the website, on Odyssey's website, and you can listen to that show and hear everything we talked about with that question, that issue, that topic going on. So we're going to jump into our first break here, but don't forget, get in on the topics, the conversations. I'd love to hear from everybody. See what's going on with you for this winter. 314-436-7900 is where you'll find me, and we're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
You're listening to The Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts on KMOX. Now, once again, here's Rich Orris.
All right, we are back, St. Louis, right into two full hours. We got a lot of time. We got a lot going on. We got plenty of time for everybody. Don't be a stranger. Give me a call, 314-436-7900. And we've got Joan on the line here, has a question for us. Joan, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for calling. What's going on?
Okay, I have an electrical question. I have two light fixtures. One is an old chandelier hangs from the dining room ceiling from a medallion, and it works fine, except for it has six different bulbs on it, and one of the bulbs, I'm not able to replace it. And I don't know if it's the light fixture itself that's defective or something going on with the unit.
Okay. Is the bulb stuck in there and you can't get it out?
No, I got the bulb up.
Okay.
Yeah, no, the bulb was stuck. I did get it out. I can turn on the unit. I can turn on the chandelier, and I get the other five all light up. But the sixth one that's defective does not, even with a new bulb. So it's probably 40 years old. I don't know if it's never going to work again, or if I need to have it repaired, or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I would think repair, because there's definitely a wire going to each socket through that fixture, and those sockets do kind of, they come loose, they break. Sometimes they'll spin when you're trying to get the bulb out, and you got to kind of, or the bulb will break off in there because it's kind of just in there too tight. So they can change those bulb sockets in the end of them usually. And so, yeah, you can take it. Well, I'm not real certain about the repair coming to your home.
Yeah,
I would ask. Yeah, because generally you like take a lamp to the repair shop and they take it there, or if you can get the fixture down. But if it's not easy to take down and take into a repair shop, and I've had repair shops do some pretty major work on fixtures where I actually had them in the past make a fixture that we thought was a little bit too big and hung a little bit too low. Made it shorter, and it wasn't like just the chain. It was the whole fixture. It was pretty cool how they did that. So there's a lot of repairs they could do to it if you take it into the shop. But I would say maybe call some electricians and see if that's something that they would have any experience in trying to do it. Because most electricians really, they install the fixture, they take it out, they put a new one in, they run the wire to it, but not many of them actually repair the fixtures on site.
I knew they used to, there used to be a company called Cab Electric. I don't know if they still are in business, if they are the ones to contact, or do you know? Or you
Would be a good one, because that's the that's like one of the repair shops that I've seen that repair stuff like that. So, and they might know that if they don't have someone that comes out, they might maybe know of someone that does.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that happened, and maybe this is a red flag, when I must have had the light fixture on at one point, and it actually burned through the little lamp shade, put a hole through the lamp shade. So I was like, whoa.
I would question if that were to happen, did you possibly put in a bulb that was more wattage than the fixture calls for that you could have? Because some of them will say up to 40 watts or up to 60 watts or
I see.
In your basement up to 100, but you don't want to put 100 in one that's 40, and that's why they call for that.
Yeah, I see. Well, one of those mini bulbs, so.
Yeah.
But I'll have to look into it. So you don't think it's an electrical problem? It's more of a light fixture problem.
Yeah, if it's a bulb in the socket and you've got four or five coming on and one not working right, not going, I think it's a repair of the fixture problem.
Okay. And the copper wiring, does that come into play here? If the house is like 50 years old, does that?
Not really. The only time that would come into play if you didn't have copper wiring, if it were aluminum and it did start kind of moving and shorting out and disconnecting. But again, where it's hooked up in the box, that really should probably cut off all of the lights or most of the lights.
Mm-hmm.
If the power was coming from like an aluminum wire that's not proper to a copper wire, I would think that would shut off. My guess would be that would shut off the whole fixture or at least half or more, a lot of them.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think I've got a plan here, so I appreciate your thoughts on this. Thank you very much.
I have no problem. Thanks for calling. Good question. And we have another Joan on the line, a second Joan number two. Joan, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Well, thanks for calling in. How you doing today?
I'm doing fine this dreary day, but I have a question about my daughter's house. They bought it about 3 years ago, and I'd say in the last year or two, they've had mold. They think it's mold coming out of their faucets, and it builds a ring around the toilet. And they, if you run a glass of water and leave it all night, the black, some kind of black material forms around the glass. So they don't know who to call. I think they've tried some people, but who would you call to try to fix this? They're afraid to drink the water. They're drinking bottled water, and they don't know what to do.
I'd be somewhat afraid to drink the water too. So the bottled water for now is a good idea. I would definitely recommend they can contact Aqua Systems.
So,
Aqua Systems has they do water softeners, water filters. They even deliver bottled water. They have the water systems with the big bottles that you put that on a stand for like we have one at our work.
Right.
Some people have them in their homes, but they can test that water and see if
they will test it.
Okay. Yeah, they'll test it and let them know if there's a bunch of calcium or what's happening in there. And they'll be able to offer like some sort of filter or maybe even a water softener might be
okay.
Something
I want to say, I have a question though. When they moved in the house, this was not happening. It actually started, they had a lot of trouble with the house. When they moved in, we had big rain and the laundry room flooded, and they had a foundation company come and dig the down and put a sump pump in and put a drain up through the wall. And I really think it started after that. Could there be a crack in something that's causing this?
Well, so, I mean, if they were getting something in that in their water lines from outside or from a foundation repair, then more than likely they would have a lot of leaking. They may even see like really large water bills if they did. So if there was a crack and it was leaking water and dirt, concrete, dust was getting inside the water line that started this happening, I would think they would see some wet stuff somewhere, either in the basement, outside the house, or they would get an extremely large water bill and go, whoa, because my water's been running a little bit constantly. If their water bill has doubled, then I would look into something like that for sure.
Okay. Okay, so you would think that this company will come out and test it and give them the solutions then?
Yeah, they can test it and offer some filters or water softeners. And the only other thing that is a possibility is have they had any water main breaks near their home in the area lately but usually they would have known that because they'll contact everybody, call for like a boil order for so long. So if they had a water main break and something happened, then maybe it would start that. But if it's been going for a while, I can imagine it'd be from a water main break.
Right. Okay. Okay. You gave me a lot of help. I want to thank you.
Okay. Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay.
Yeah, I wish you luck in figuring that out. I think AquaSystems.
Yeah, it's been a big puzzle.
can give you a hand with that for sure. So appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. And for everybody else out there, we're here. We've got plenty of time. We're going to jump into a break here, but don't forget, go ahead. Anything you need, what do you need? Let me know. 314-436-7900. More to come after this. All right, everybody. We are back. Plenty of fun, plenty of questions, plenty of topics, a lot to go over with you today. Whatever you need, I'm here for you. Maintenance, remodeling, tips, DIY stuff. Don't worry, I got your back. 314-436-7900 is where you find me, just like Tom found me here. We got Tom on the line. Tom, can you hear me? What's going on?
Well, I've got a question about the solar panels and the roof.
Yeah, okay.
We got an estimate of $47,000 to put the panels on, and it looks like it's about a 20-year payback. The roof is 14 years old, and it is steeper than average. They are going to have to go up the front to go over the top to put all the panels on the back side of the roof. Will this seem to hurt that roof at that time or not?
Well, the more traffic, the more you're on that roof, and it will also depend on when they do this. Because if they do it in the summer when it's really hot, you can really dig in. Those asphalt shingles get softer, and you can dig into them, and you can damage them that way too with too much traffic on it when it's really hot. If they do it kind of earlier spring when it's not 80, 90, 100 degrees, you're definitely better off. Have you had the roof inspected by someone to say, how old do you really think this is? Is it really going to last? How long do you maybe predict? What's the condition of the roof? Because if you don't have good attic ventilation underneath a roof, and the roof gets really hot and doesn't ventilate well from the attic side in the summer, it can make that roof brittle. It can basically take off about half the life expectancy of a roof. So depending on how your roof system is, how well ventilated it is. If you have a 30-year shingle and your roof's 14 years old, that's approximately 15 years would be approximately half the life expectancy, which means your roof could be older and more worn than you think, and it would be worth considering. Do you do a roof before these shingle, the solar panels go on, so you've got a system that works together, and you're not going to need a roof 5 years from now after putting on solar panels that you hope for 20 years and a 20-year payback?
Okay, well, they're saying that if you put the panels up there and then you put a roof on, that they will charge you $100 per panel to take them down and put them back up.
Yep.
That sounds reasonable.
Yes, that does. So that's kind of the part of the reason, too, worth to consider, because it may be $100 a panel now. If it's 5 years from now, maybe it's $120 a panel. Mm-hmm. And if you're just depending on that roof, the roof is going to cost more 5 years from now. So if you kind of take that in consideration, get the roof inspected and say, really, I wouldn't even have a lot of conversation on the solar panels. I would say, I'm just wondering, what kind of life expectancy do you think is left in this roof?
Okay.
And let them kind of talk about your roof. Don't give them a reason to try and push you in one direction mm-hmm. or the other. I would just say, hey, I'm just looking for a good quality inspection and to really think, is this, how old do you think my roof is and how much life do you think it has left? Because I've seen some roofs that it's like, wow, they're really, really, really worn. And they're only 15, 20 years old. And I've seen others that they're 15 years old. And I would have guessed 5 or 6 between maybe 5 and 10 years old. So they have a lot of life expectancy left in them.
Well, in our neighborhood, they're doing the installations now in this kind of weather.
Yeah. Yeah. And really that's fine for them. The only thing I would be concerned with is making sure it's obviously they're not going to want to do it with too much ice, that sort of thing.
Right.
How cold the temperature is when they use just their kind of tar caulk and all that, make sure it's not underneath. The only threat mm-hmm. is if it's underneath the temperature of any adhesive recommendation. Look at the adhesives mm-hmm. that they're using and see what the recommended application is for temperature range and what the low is mm-hmm. and make sure it's above that when they're doing that work. But yeah, they can do this work when it's pretty darn cold.
Okay, well, thank you for answering my questions.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for the call there, Tom. The great thing, and those solar panels are a really, really great, good thing to do to just in everything that you do. If you can get it managed and you're going to stay in your home that long, it is optimal. It will make the house worth more. Obviously, when you go to sell it, all of that, it's solar panels are a great, great thing to invest in. I was just talking to a client yesterday that she still has like a credit where she didn't have an electric bill and she has electric heat and she hasn't seen electric bill yet because she has solar panels. Now she's saying she will when it gets really cold, and probably come January, she'll end up with somewhat of an electric bill, but nothing like everybody else's without solar panels. So, hey, we've got Bob here on hold. If you could hold for like 2 minutes during this quick break, we're pushing up on the time that I don't want to get too far into it. So we're going to take a fast break for you here, and we're going to get to Bob when we return, if that's okay with you. And we'll be back right after this.
Now, back to the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts on KMOX. Once again, here's Rich Orris.
All right, we're back. Let's get straight to Bob. We'll get Bob on the line here. Thanks for holding through the break there, Bob. How you doing?
Doing good, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. What you got going on for us?
Well, I got a question. I've got some 10-year-old bypass doors and a main bath, shower tub enclosure, and they're about 10 years old, and, you know, they're off-the-shelf product, and they've held up quite well until the last time. I'm not sure, you know, we're not sure what happened. If somebody sprayed one of those Glade air fresheners or something like that, maybe got it on the shower door.
Uh-huh.
And this has got a frosted finish on it, right? You know, because in that bath, you know, my wife says, oh, well, I think we should have something besides clear glass. You know, in case somebody pops open the door, you know, it's a privacy issue, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, and so I said, okay. So, I mean, it's held up quite well. 10 years, it looks good. The frame looks good. It's clean and everything. But I think somebody may have sprayed one of those air freshener things and got it right on that frosted glass. So I'm thinking that's probably what happened, why she can't clean it, you know, so it's left a spot, you know, like a water spot. So it's probably going to be one of those kind of issues where it's just, you know, reached its functional obsolescence, you know,
yeah,
at this point.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Does that make sense? You know, I mean, I don't know how many people are using frosted glass anymore. I think, you know, clear glass is probably the go-to these days.
Yeah, no, clear glass definitely is, and it's kind of a space feel issue also, of it just makes the room feel bigger. And showers that we do are nice looking, and some of them have really nice fixtures, so it's not an eyesore to see the shower either, so... It's kind of nice all the way around to have the clear glass. But, yeah, it definitely makes sense, too, that something got on there, and if there's spots you can't get off, it's in getting those spots off, you might use something harsh enough to basically work into that frost, and you'll have an even bigger spot.
Yeah, because I'm
looks bad.
Yeah, I'm assuming that the frosting is only on the outside, that the inside is probably, it was probably a clear glass panel to start with, would you think? And then they sprayed something on it to frost it?
Yeah, so they definitely usually put the smooth glass side on the inside of the shower, and then any frosting, or when they, you see like the rainfall kind of wavy glass, mm-hmm. that's always on the outside of the shower. So the smooth side is where the water can run off and you can clean it a lot easier. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I figured I was getting in trouble because it sounds like she says, well, I think you did something. And I said, I don't think I did it. I said, I could just tell you, you know, after 10 years, you know, I wouldn't feel bad about having to replace it. You know what I mean? Because that's pretty good, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And so you could try... If you're at the point where you're okay replacing it, you could try then to use like some kind of nasty, stinky, like an oil-based goof off to try and clean that area.
Yeah.
And it could make even a bigger spot that you go, well, I got that spot off, but it took a lot of that frost, or it really damaged the glass where I wiped that. Then that's okay because you just get new doors. But then if it works and it doesn't damage it and it looks good, then maybe you're like, okay, well, then why bother? We'll wait.
Yeah. I think she was wanting to get some new stuff anyway.
Well, that's
so
good.
It's going to kind of work out. You know, I said, okay, you know, I'm not adverse to doing a little extra work. But I just, you know, that was the first time I ever had frosted glass anyway.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, you know. The other one, I put it in the same time. There are two different manufacturers, and it's a perfectly clear glass, you know, but it comes with instructions. Use this side only on the inside, you know, and use this one on the outside. So I followed all the instructions. That still looks like the day I put it in, you know, everything, including the frame. You know, it's really worked out great. And I said, I was just waiting for something bad to happen.
Yeah. No, that's good.
And
I mean, follow the instructions. I always... definitely read the instructions, follow the instructions, understand what everything is, and things will work better and last better and all that. And so on the other door with the spots, I feel like I'm pretty good at advice on people's homes, but if you want a little marital advice, I would apologize for the spots and say, yeah, hon, we should probably just get new doors.
Yeah, and that's what exactly what I did. I read your instructions before you sent them telepathically.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry I did that. Yeah.
Well, that's all right. No problem.
It. Yeah.
No harm, no foul. It's going to work out great either way.
Yeah, no, that's all good.
Rich. All right, Rich. Well, I appreciate your input, and thanks for your help and all the information and your show, and have a Merry Christmas.
Yeah, hey, you too. Thanks for the call, Bob. I have really enjoyed that one. That was awesome. And, yeah, that's for all us married guys out there. It's, you know, it's kind of like the whole Christmas conversation. When the longer you're married and the longer you're married, and finally one day you kind of say, well, I mean, we don't really need to exchange gifts. When your wife says that, run out and buy a gift the next day. That's my advice to you on that marital side. So do what you can. So me and my wife been doing that a little bit, and she's like, well, we don't really need big stuff and all this and that. And then she came through the house and was like, hey, don't look. I got something. I got to get to the bedroom. And I'm like, well, I thought you weren't buying me anything. And she's like, well, I didn't mean that. We'd get something small. And I, believe me, I already have like three things for her. So don't worry about that from my end. but back to the house, though, something I would touch on for today, and something I actually did this morning. We talk a lot about that walkabout around the outside of your house. I talked about it a little bit more last Saturday about when to do it. And guess what? We've got a lot of long, steady rain going on here today. I actually, on the way into the station this morning, I stopped by one of my clients' house, and we believe there's some gutter issues going on with overflowing and screens kind of moved around and missing. So I went and I actually did a walkabout on my way here at their house, hoping to see what I could see. And I did see at least about three places where those gutters are kind of running over, overflowing, water going where it shouldn't. And then some of the ground pipes disconnected and water going where it shouldn't in different places. So I think there's definitely some gutter work, gutter repairs, gutter replacement to kind of control that water around the house. And it's such an important thing. So on a day like today, I wish it would have been raining actually harder than it was. If you could really get out there during the downpour, it's raining cats and dogs when that's your feeling, your statement, then definitely that's the opportune time to go out and see, take some pictures, take some videos, see what things are happening, and that will help the professionals understand what's going on and really help get to the root of something to help you out, because a lot of water coming in around foundations and porches and patios can be controlled by the gutters, the downspout drains in the ground. You got to understand, where do they go? Where do they exit? Are they functioning to that exit is really a big deal. So get out there during this break, do your walkabout, see what's going on around your house, see what's puddling, all of that. We're going to get into our middle hour break here. Got a lot of show for you in the next full hour. 314-436-7900. All right, we are back. Second hour, plenty to go through. Had a lot of great questions and conversations in the first hour. Got the 97.1 side joining us for the second hour. So more people, more questions, more audience. Just love it. You can give me a call here right now today, 314-436-7900. Got plenty of time for everybody in this second hour. And we've got Rick on the line, and Rick has a question for us. What's going on, Rick?
Good morning, or good afternoon now.
Yeah, actually, appreciate that.
Yeah, I have my back patio is covered by a corrugated tin roof that leaks. It's leaking a lot today. Okay. I kind of have a two-part question. One is, you know, what kind of material would you use to put on it to stop the leaks? You know, it's all in the seams, you know, I've already caulked where they've where the seams have overlapped, and tried to glue them together. They're all screwed in, but you know, it still leaks. So I want to find like a cover all, and then also the roof has no pitch, so and it is tucked to the house. So you know, could I drop that, you know, half inch or a quarter of an inch or something, and get some drainage? And you know, is that a good idea, or would it pull it, you know, pull the tuck away and cause more problems?
Well, so I mean, kind of yes to a little bit of everything, including if you lowered it, that could help some of the leaks, but you do have to watch how it's connected to the house and what happens back there, because these kind of corrugated patio roofs systems they put generally just kind of bolt to either the fascia, maybe right underneath the gutter, and lowering it could do some damage back there or break open a sealant that's back there. So the type of roof structure that you have, it would move the water away from the seams a little bit quicker if it did have somewhat of a pitch. But it, again, like we said, it could cause something in the back there. You're really up against kind of what you're doing with this system, is to just keep trying to find the areas. You got to try and seal it up, caulk it, do whatever you can. When it's dry, make sure it's dried real good when you do it. Or the only other thing you could consider, and there's a limited life expectancy too, and I would talk to people about warranties, but there are professional services with roof coatings where maybe they could coat the whole top side of it, and it's the same thing you're doing, but if they could clean it up, coat the whole thing, and that seals everything up for now. How long that lasts, I don't know. How well they'll warranty it, if they'll say, well, we'll guarantee it won't leak for 12 months, but not after that, might not end up being worth it. But that's another avenue you could kind of consider, is there a product that could coat that whole roof that helps seal that up? Because that stuff seals up pretty,
Do you have any ideas or any suggestions on a retail product that I could purchase and do that?
I do not. I really don't know of any retail roof coating purchases or products to just purchase like that. I'm not sure what the roof coating companies even kind of use in theirs or anything. I'm not very familiar with it, other than I've seen it done. I know it exists. I've had a lot of clients with flat roofs in the city that say, yeah, we just coated it with this company and it fixed everything for now. But there's just a big life expectancy question. But so the way completely out is to build a patio roof, which is going to be an expense. So,
yeah.
So to really do it and say, I never have to worry about it, like through Mosby Building Arts, I get a 10-year workmanship warranty, build a complete roof that then is a good actual roof system. But yeah, again, you're going to be a huge expense. So especially if you can DIY a lot of this, sometimes it's just worth the battle of you're doing something to it every other summer or something like that when it gets warm to try and stop these leaks.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've been doing.
Does it have like, is it one of those systems where it has like a gutter system at the end of it that's built in? Oh, it doesn't? So everything just rolls off of it?
Yeah, you know, and it's, you know, it's exposed wood underneath and then just the corrugated tin on top. I mean, there's not even any kind of backer board or anything like that. So,
yeah,
you know, that is problematic in itself. And, you know, we're not looking to go ahead and build, a new part of the roof. So that's,
sure. Yeah.
That's kind of out of the question too.
Totally,
you know,
totally
I'm just
get
looking,
that.
Just,
yeah.
Just looking for the quick fix, you know, so whenever we're sitting outside, you know, we're not getting rained on.
So the screws that go through that corrugated, they should be like kind of a flatter Phillips type screw, almost like a cabinet type looking screw, where the the back side of the screw is kind of almost like a washer built in.
Yes.
And then there's a rubber washer that goes on there first, and that rubber kind of helps seal that hole. You might need to also maybe replace a bunch of those or all of those screws with the rubber washers too. That could be an area where it's getting through.
Yeah, the house is, and I think that this is probably going toward the 4 to 5 to 6 year, life so far.
Oh, okay.
About 5 or 6 years old. So it's not that bad, but still it's bad. And, I'm just looking for suggestions.
Yeah, I would try and seal everything that you can. Maybe look for a product that will go over the whole thing. Just do some research.
Roll it on.
Roof coating products that you roll on, and that could help quite a bit. And then you can pull out those screws and get new screws with the rubber washer on them to just basically replace all those screws one at a time, and that could be another area that helps you out.
Okay. Thanks.
All righty. Yeah, no, you're very welcome. Yep. I totally get, though, keeping up with it's in this industry, it's about knowing what you're up against to where that system's great and okay if you're a good DIYer and you don't mind performing the maintenance and it costs way, way less. And these are the decisions we're making on a daily basis about all sorts of products like that. And how long do we think they'll last? How well are they made? What are even bathroom and kitchen faucets? And you get it from the plumbing supply house and you have a plumber put it in, and the plumber will help back that whole faucet and system up with years to come with the warranty. You get it from Home Depot and it's got some plastic internal parts and it's not brass fittings. And then the plumbers are like, yep, that's why that faucet costs so much less. And that's okay. If you're good, like myself, you're a good DIYer, I look at it and I go, I could replace a faucet again. I'm good for that. Not everybody is and can. So that's kind of the decisions that you're making. But hey, we're going to jump into our first break here. So get with us. Anything you need, 314-436-7900. We'll be right back with more to come after this. All right, we're back. Having a great time today. KMOX Home Improvement Show, your route to me. Anything you need, 314-436-7900. Pick up the phone. Give me a shout. We'll figure out whatever we can for you, whatever you need. Just like Chris did, we got Chris on the line here. Let's see what's going on. Chris, can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me, Rich?
I can. Thanks for calling.
Hey, no problem. Hey, I had a thought on what the last guy was asking about with that roof.
Yeah, with the roof.
And obviously you're a professional and you do this every day and sometimes on TV, I'm sure too. But what I was thinking about is, could you possibly put some angled pieces in there to elevate the end of the house and let it slope down to the other end so that you didn't have to worry about the connection to the house breaking or doing something there, and then just maybe flash it into the roof or something like that. And that would save him, it's possibly a similar cost as trying to paint that thing or something like that. But that's just a thought I would have and maybe think about trying.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, every situation is a little bit different, and it's maybe something like that would work and help out. It's, yeah, hard to tell till you're kind of there really looking at it and everything. And I the last roof I installed that was kind of a corrugated system like this, little patio covered roof we did, that roof connection at the house, at the fascia, wherever you connect that, is definitely where I see the most problems with that type of roof system. So we did one a couple years ago, and of course when we did it, we took off siding, we got it up against the house, and we put in a lot of counter flashing that went up behind the siding and behind the house wrap, and just covered with a good size counter flashing to kind of just cover up that seam, because when you caulk that to the wall or to the fascia, that's just, even if you don't tip that roof, that's only going to last so long. So some kind of metal flashing, something coming down there would be a good idea to cover that backside up, whether, no matter how he gets the water running off the roof. So it's a good idea, though. I appreciate the call and the hey, advice there on that, the ideas. Yeah. Yeah, no problem. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, Rich.
Yeah, and of course, well, it rains like this, and it brings out everything. It brings, in the past couple weeks, I've seen three homes with gutter issues. One, we're going to replace all the gutters, downspouts, everything on the house. So some of the things we see quite often is just the fact that if you haven't had new gutters, if you haven't had gutters put on in the past 5 to 10 years at best, then you probably have 5-inch gutters. If it's been well more than that, if it's been 30, 40 something years, you may have 4-inch gutters. So the amount of water that we need to manage coming off of roofs just seems to have really increased. And getting to a bigger 6-inch gutter that sits nice and square, drains off well, an oversized downspout to get that water moving down, it's still a system that could be overwhelmed by a big enough rain or an issue. It just, you get too much. Each size gutter, each size pipe in the ground is only going to handle so much water. If you ever seen the sewers back up in the street and it kind of fills up a low spot in the street for a half hour or an hour or so in a really bad rain coming down, it's a lot of water coming down. It's overfilling a 30 to a 36 inch pipe. So if you put a 4-inch pipe in the ground, well, a 6-inch pipe's going to handle more water than that, but you could still get a rain big enough, fast enough to overpower that drain. And sometimes there's just, unfortunately, not too much you could do about that other than know the system's working, keep it clean, and know it's working 99% of the year. When you get one or two of those 4-5-inch gully washer rains inside of a couple hours, it just may be something that happens that you have to deal with. It's unfortunate, but it just does. And we see that also sometimes where it's just so much. But one of the houses I'm looking at, the one I looked at this morning, it's got the half round old copper gutters. Some of them are really leaning down, so they're pouring off the edge. There's screens over them, but they move around and they shift, and there's spots where they're open and a lot of tree debris is getting in there. So there's issues there that could be taken care of that we think could really help out an overall water issue of the whole thing. But like I said, go around, look, check it out, and really see what's happening during these storms, and maybe we can figure out what's going on and help you out with something like that. Or you give us a call, let us know what you're seeing, what you're finding, and we can talk about it live right here on the air today. 314-436-7900 is the number to get into me. So I go around and I see these things. I see these houses with the gutter issues going on, with the gutters needing to replace. If you're looking and you are walking around your house, if you do look at the downspouts, look at the elbows, look at the seams in those downspouts and see if there's discoloration. See if it looks like color's been coming out of there. If there's kind of a black line, black gunk, if you see, that means they're probably clogged up or have been clogged up at some time and water leaking, and it's trying to push those leaves and debris out of there and the dirt out of there with it. So when you see that, understand that that could be something that definitely should have a professional or somebody clean out, look at, and figure out what to do with that. But I see a lot of other types of projects too. And I see a lot of wants and dreams of houses with room additions and kitchens and bathrooms and all these different projects that people would love to have done. And just in the past couple of weeks, I saw a couple different projects that both of them, well, one was talking about wanting a roof system, and it would have been kind of built and very near the edge of a very tall retaining wall. I saw another one where there's a pier and a post that's kind of failing, moving, sinking down. The post is starting to lean that's supporting the deck. And again, that pier is about a foot or so from about a 2 foot tall retaining wall. And there's a lot to consider when you put in a support and a footing that close to a retaining wall in the yard. You got to figure how that's going to work. If you're too close to it, there's frost lines to worry about with how deep you go. So it'd be beneficial to take that down to the frost line of the ground in front of the retaining wall, not of the ground behind the retaining wall. Because if you're close enough to it, you could still get a frost line underneath there that can move that around. But you also got to think about the pressure. If you're too close to it and the weight that ground's holding, it could be pushing against that retaining wall, putting weight against that retaining wall, and that's when everything kind of slides, tips, moves, goes to the side, post starts getting crooked. So you really got to understand and have someone kind of engineer, how do I do a concrete support pier that holds up a structure, a roof or a deck or something like that with a retaining wall in the yard? Definitely have good professionals check that out and understand how you need to dig that out and how you need to get that support. So we're about halfway through this last hour, but there's another full half hour to go. There's a lot of show for everyone. If you have any topics, any questions, any comments, any concerns, feel free to get with me in the next segment, 314-436-7900. We'll take a short break, and we'll have plenty more to come after this. Don't touch that dial. All right, guys, here we are. We've got plenty of time for everybody, so again, feel free to jump in, 314-436-7900. Anything you need about your house, we got it for you. We got Michael on the line. Let's see what's happening with Michael. Are you there?
Yes, sir. Hey, I've had a house now for about a year and a half, so I want to see if you can address the issue of those infamous basement smells, you know, that occasional must, that occasional sewer gas, whatever, but it's not there all the time, just occasional, right? So I'm just trying to really troubleshoot and get rid of that totally if possible, so I can really enjoy my basement. And so any thoughts on what causes that? I think there was an old septic system, like an old well, you know, the house was built in 1949. So I said, you know, you can do the baking soda vinegar thing down the drain, you know, that kind of takes care of it. But I just wonder if there's kind of a master solution, or what steps do you take to kind of really get rid of those odors?
So is it more of like the sewer gas smell from the drains, or is it like just a general musty?
A little of both, but it, like I said, it's occasional. Okay. It's not all the time. That makes it hard to pinpoint, right?
Yes, and being built in 1949, yeah, there could be, you could have a couple things going on where one could be having the actual floor drain cleaned out, having the drains scoped out or augered out to make sure the drain underneath the floor is really working well and everything's going away. Because sometimes kind of backups and just everything in those pipes if they haven't been cleaned in a long time. Sometimes those pipes have like a, it's like a sludge, like they, you can auger it and it'll, the auger that spins will go through it and back again. And it's like a mucky sludge. And that's why years ago they came up with the whole, it's kind of like a power pressure wash for inside of those drain pipes, where it's a just a really hard spray that will flush all that out and push it down the line past some low dips and areas of those pipes. So that can, having those floor drains checked and cleaned out and flushed out can help with the sewer gas in times that that may be happening. But other times, the musty smell can definitely come from damp areas, areas where you're just, and it's not even necessarily wet, but even just moisture from different areas. If you have an area where the house overhangs the foundation and it's damp outside and there's insulation and stuff in there, or I've seen it where they do kind of like the front porch over a baited out area of the home that is not over the foundation. So it's kind of like a trapped ground underneath a baited out area. So there's areas that you can kind of get that dirt, must wetness at certain times. One thing I would definitely say to watch out for is when you smell like the musty smell and you're like, it's just kind of feels like musty, a little damp or something like that. Think about when that is and what the weather's been doing. Is it a time like now where we're getting a lot of rain and then you get the musty smell for the next 3-4 days?
No, sometimes, but sometimes not. That's right. Yeah. I can't pinpoint. Sometimes it's beautiful. It's been dry for, you know, a week and then all of a sudden I'll smell it.
Yeah.
What about the insulation? That's one thing I haven't replaced yet. Could that be part of the musty? I mean, it's been there a while. It needs to be done on the basement.
I mean, it's more what's getting to the insulation itself. If it's
right,
a lot of air infiltration, if there is an overhanging part with dirt on the other side and you're getting a lot of moisture, or if there's a part of the house that's a crawl space that you don't always see or go in. So I would really recommend just a really good inspection of, one, the drains under the house, just basically a sewer company that does camera scoping and augering and flushing out, and have someone like that come out and just check out all the drains underneath the basement floor, make sure they're good, make sure there's no issues, and make sure they're cleaned out. And then I would also recommend a good inspection just of the basement by a person similar to myself that's like, okay, I get these musty smells sometimes. Look at the house. We look at the outside. We look at the inside. We look at all these conditions. We look inside of things that may be suspect and try and just help pinpoint, is there something that we find that we see that could be causing that to happen? Because each house is so different, it really takes a really good inspection.
Wow, great advice there. I will definitely pursue that avenue and maybe get this solved once and for all.
Yeah, yeah.
Another quick one. Do you ever have an issue of like intermittent, you know, your furnace will work and then it just quits, and I go reset the breaker, I have to get it working, but I'm told that there's actually a code that's displayed that helps them diagnose exactly what's wrong.
Yeah, but yeah, there is. And that's, I just had one at my daughter's house because hers quit working. And I got my HVAC guy set up to go out there and look at it. But in the interim, her fiance was like, oh, if you click the switch on and off, I've had that happen before, and that resets it, and it did reset it, and the heat did start working again, and it erased that code. So yeah, on the furnace, there's a light that will blink, and so when your furnace stops working, if you look at that light and you see how it's blinking, it's kind of like Morse code. There's going to be different, and there should be a sticker on the furnace that kind of shows you what the codes mean. So if it's like two short blinks and a long blink, or if it's three quick short blinks and then a little space and then three again and a little space. So it's kind of almost like a Morse code, how this thing blinks, and you, once they know how that's blinking, they can look at that code and figure out why it's been kicking off. So yeah, there's several reasons. It could be just air not flowing properly, that it just kicks it off. If something's blocked somewhere, if your furnace filter's dirty, that could kind of change that airflow and cause that. So there's so many things that can cause it, but yeah, look at that blinking light and write down what it is, how it's blinking before you reset that switch or that breaker, so that'll kind of indicate to them, why did it occur?
All right. Sounds good. Great advice. Thank you very much. Very helpful show that you offer here.
Oh, no problem. I appreciate that. And I try my best to be as helpful as possible. So I'm glad it works, and I'm glad it works at least most of the time anyway. So, but yeah, that's was definitely some good questions. And I would say, that is something, looking at that basement for whoever, for Michael, definitely, that's something that Mosby Building Arts can take a look at. It's something that some of us are pretty well versed in: water control, moisture, looking at the house scientifically. How does it really work? What causes things to happen? And really be able to figure out some things that sometimes even the builders can't figure out, that they know standard stuff and they know, like, this is just how we do this. But then understanding how the house works and seeing certain conditions can lead to a diagnosis of, this is something we see, this is something that's happening, and it could be playing a part in that musty smell, and then coming up with a good solution to it. I've seen a lot of people go straight to a foundation company, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes we look at it two or three different ways just to get everybody's piece of advice. The house that I was talking about that I stopped by to look at this morning, we had our foundation specialist out there yesterday just to say, well, the person that uncovered everything and does all the tearing out and drying out of the home where the water came in was there. I was there looking at just how the house is functioning and where water's going. And then we got the foundation company too to say, is there anything you see that maybe we're missing, just to reassure? And we kind of got it where we think it's in one direction. We didn't really have much for the foundation company, but it's so good to get all the levels of advice, because I've had plenty of people where they have a foundation company come out there. I got water coming in and I'm seeing this and it runs down this wall, and they say, well, we can put this system on your foundation wall and we can guide that water into the sump pump system. Well, but the water's really coming from a window leak 2 or 3 feet above the foundation through the actual wall. So it's rotting out the wall. So managing that water once it gets to the basement, I had one couple weeks ago that a handyman caulked the inside of the floor joist, bam board, the sill plate inside on top of the foundation, just caulked all the seams and everything, and said, well, if that doesn't stop the water from coming in, call somebody that's good with the exterior and have them look at it. And I'm kind of going, wow, well, all that wood framing is like an inch and a half thick. And if your caulk is on the inside of that and your water is coming from the outside of that, all that's really going to do is speed up the rotting process. It's going to stop the water from getting in temporarily, speed up the getting wet and rotting process of the wood until it starts coming inside again, address what's going on from the exterior to make that water go away. And so just a bit of advice to say, have multiple levels of people look at this, because sometimes the water isn't always coming from just the foundation. There's a way it's getting there. It's running downhill, and it's getting there, and you got to kind of find where is that starting point. Sometimes it's at the gutters and the roof, and sometimes it's at the wall, it's at the door, it's at the window, it's at the outlet that penetrates the wall by the door. There's all these different places that this can happen, and just controlling how the water comes in isn't always the best solution. But we're going to get our final break in here, and you know, talking about how water runs and going downhill and all this stuff. Maybe in the next segment, we'll talk briefly on how water actually runs uphill. Might be a little bit of a surprise to somebody. But also, if you need anything, we got one more segment for you. We got time for a call for you for sure. 314-436-7900. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. And, you know, I did a little teaser there that before the break, maybe we talk about how water rolls uphill. Before we get into that, I did want to add one more thing for Michael in the last call on that basement. When you are having the sewer gas smells, if you have a floor drain in that basement or one or two floor drains, make sure there's some water in that trap, because the water can evaporate out of there and just get so low that it starts letting those sewer gas smells. So it could be as simple as pouring a bucket of water down that floor drain and making sure there's water in there to block the actual sewer gas smells from coming out of there. But so looking at water runs downhill, water takes the path of least resistance, air does the same thing, kind of takes the path of least resistance. But have you ever seen water go up? Have you ever heard the explanation of how we get water to move uphill? Well, that is ice damming on your roof. And basically your roof is slanted, angled down. Everything should run right off of it. But when you get snow on your roof, and that snow is sitting on the edge of the roof, and you have heat escaping from your home, and this is part of why it is so important for the attic insulation and air sealing and trying to keep the heat in your home and the attic, the outside cold air space, for proper ventilation. So as that happens and you get these warmer temperatures and that snow starts melting from the bottom side because of the heat coming out of the roof, and then you've got your 1 foot or so overhang. So when that melts and runs down there, it gets cold again. That area is very cold and refreezes. So this process, it creates like a ridge of ice, or it's what they call an ice dam. And so that basically prevents additional melting snow from being able to drain off down the roof. So instead it traps that, backs that water up, actually works it up behind the shingles and gets in and can seep in underneath the shingles. And then it potentially causes water damage to the roof of the home, the sheeting under the roof, the framing, and then to your drywall inside. So signs of that happening a lot. A couple of them are actually from the outside. Of course, the first is from the inside. If you're seeing water stains and leaks on the interior ceiling or wall, and it's kind of near on the ceiling near the outside wall, and a lot of times you'll start to see this come spring, because it's happening in the winter and it repeatedly keeps getting wet, and then all of a sudden it's starting to warm up and it seems like you're now finding these water stains. But if you look from the outside of the home, then you can kind of see if there's icicles hanging from your roof edge or your gutter. That can be a sign that there's some ice damming going on, or just uneven snow melting patterns on that roof. If you look at that roof and it's really melting way different over here than here, If you look at the front of your roof and it's covered with snow and you've got a patch on the left-hand side that's kind of melting away, you know you've got some kind of leak, attic air moving and heat from the home going up and getting up in there and causing that. So some of the causes of this ice damming situation is poor attic insulation. You've got your warm air from your living space escaping into the attic, heat getting into that in the underside of the roof, can lights, where the lights are, attic scuttles, attic whole house fans that are in the ceiling into the attic cause a lot of heat loss from the house into that attic. So that can be another one. So temperature fluctuations can cause it. And then, of course, inadequate ventilation, lack of any proper airflow, getting air moving, getting that air out of that attic can also cause that from happening. So it can cause some real problems for you in that. So, but, hey, it seems like we got Vince on the line. We got a really quick time here. Vince, what's going on?
Okay, I'm trying to change an outlet in the kitchen. It's a GCIF. Can I do that on my own, or do I need to call an electrician?
No, if you follow the instructions and you turn the power off from the box, follow the instructions, make sure you get the right wires in the right places, make sure the ground is hooked up like it says. It's just like really replacing any other outlet. Just follow the instructions and do it the way it says, and you should be good.
All right. Thank you very much.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, that is a good DIY. If you're not afraid of getting shocked, the electrical, make sure you turn that power off. Make sure you got it off in on the right one. Cell phones have helped that really greatly because you can plug that tester into that outlet. Then you can have somebody standing there, and as you're checking the breakers, they can kind of tell you, yep, it's off. They've made it a lot easier for us in how we figure out projects, understand them, translate it to everybody else, and communicate between one another. So, hey, had a great time. A lot of great questions and everything. Remember, be good to your homes, and I can't wait to talk to everybody next week.